Well, now on Saturday Extra to an intriguing idea. What if mayors ruled the world? It's the subject of a book that argues that national governments are too preoccupied with sovereignty issues to really take care of the fabric of society anymore, so that this in turn is falling more and more often to local government. At a time when, quotes, urbanity now defines humanity, the academic Ben Barber believes it's the local level of government that can do more and more quickly. So it follows, he argues, that it's this level of government that needs more focus at this time. Dr. Barber is from the Centre on Philanthropy and Civil Society at the City University of New York. He's also the founder and president of the Interdependence Movement, and his earlier books include Jihad versus McWorld and Strong Democracy. His most recent book is If Mayors Ruled the World, Dysfunctional Nations and Rising Cities, and it's been garnering quite a lot of interest. He joins me now quite aptly from the streets of New York City. Hello and welcome.
Well, it's a pleasure. In a way, it's very appropriate that I'm actually on the streets of a big city as we talk about cities.
Quite so. We thought the same thing. Look, of course, local government works a little differently in the US than it does in Australia. In your country, city mayors in particular have a lot of power, don't they? Could you outline what they're responsible for in the US?
Well, here, I mean, let me say that you're quite right to say that in every country of the world, there are somewhat different jurisdictions, different. Some in some countries, mayors are appointed, and some they're chosen. In some, as in India and Morocco, they are governors of regions rather than mayors of the city. In Brussels, there are 13 local mayors and then a regional governor. So it varies a lot. And I use mayors as a kind of metaphor for city governors, whether it's a city council or a city manager or a local governor. But the point about city governance is that unlike national governments, it is concerned with the everyday issues of how we live. We are born in cities, we grow up, we're educated, we marry, we pray, we play, we have our jobs, we get old and sick, and we die in cities. Cities define us. It's not just another level of government. They are the essential human community. Aristotle said a long time, you know, men are political animals. You might want to say today we are urban animals. We are an urban species, and more than half the world's population today actually live in cities, and in the Western world, in the developed world, in Australia and the United States and Europe and Japan, it's more 75 or 80% of people live in cities. So cities really are our destiny. It's where the rubber hits the road. And as a result, mayors have to be pragmatic problem solvers. They can't stand on high principle and rhetoric. They can't freeze government. They can't close down government. I mean, let me ask your listeners this question. Last fall, for the second time in 2 years, the government in Washington closed. Nobody noticed. But imagine Perth closing. Imagine Vancouver or San Francisco closing. You can't close cities. No hospitals, no fire departments, no police, no schools. Cities are always there. They're always functioning. They're pragmatic instruments. And as a result, the governance of cities is pragmatic, practical, and problem-solving. And that's why city governance is so much more effective in the world today the national government.
Now, I'm going to come to that, but I just want to get your own setting. I mean, you live on the Upper West Side of New York, and you, it turns out, deliberately focus on your neighbourhood when giving your address, and then you have almost a set of concentric circles you pull out to fully describe your identity. Why make that distinction?
Well, that's actually a very nice point, and it goes to the heart of what I said about urban community as giving our identity, because cities, in fact, most cities, London, Paris, New York, are really congeries of neighborhoods, you know, old towns stitched together, villages as in Paris, stitched together into a larger community, regions and districts stitched together into a city. So that when we talk about the city, we are talking about neighborhoods. The first great Western city in ancient Athens was occupied by 10 tribes, 10 demoi, living in 10 different districts, and together they constituted Athens. So in a sense, it's not that I do that or people do that, it's that we urban dwellers do that because though we live in cities made up of neighborhoods. And that's that locality, that palpability, that sense of this is where I live, this is where I function, and this is really my life. And mayors, again, therefore, have to be pragmatists. Well, one thing that's happened in the 21st century is that mayors all over the world are increasingly refusing to identify themselves by Labor or Tory, by progressive or conservative, by liberal or reactionary. They're defining themselves simply as urban problem solvers, and the party they're elected on makes less and less difference. Michael Bloomberg was first a Democrat, then a Republican. He ended up an independent. Boris Johnson of London calls himself an anarcho-socialist. The first truly elected mayor in England, George Ferguson, attached himself to no party and was elected by a massive majority last year.
Okay. And what's the thesis you make then about this type of temperament coming into power? How do you think it could change things?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, we started the world, civilization and democracy started in the city, and then by the Middle Ages and the early modern period, cities were too small. The scale of societies and national territories required larger democratic governments, and that led to a kind of representative government and federalism. And some people say, well, you want to go back to the city, but you're going backwards. And you're claiming we live in a global world, yet you want to devolve power back to the city. But here's the key part of my argument. I am arguing that as we go back and devolve power to cities, cities working together across borders in an interdependent and global way increasingly are finding they can solve global problems that nations can't. And the perfect example of that is climate change, where since Copenhagen 5 years ago and the Kyoto Protocol not being renewed, nation states have failed every year to do anything to even upgrade Kyoto, let alone really do a more important and larger climate agreement. But cities, through organizations like ICLEI, the Environmental Issues Global Organization, the C40 climate cities, which are actually today 65 large cities around the world that cooperate, cities are actually collaborating on curbing emissions. 80% of carbon emissions come from cities. So it means if cities take action, they can eliminate 80% of the carbon emissions in the world, whether or not states do anything. And they are doing it.
Well, in fact, in both Melbourne and Sydney, there's quite a lot of involvement with that C40 Cities Climate Leadership Group. And I know in the city of Sydney, the Mayor Clover Moore has put a lot of effort into tri-generation facilities, for instance, to really create off-grid behaviour in the cities. And that's been a long-standing effort, which I think is coming to fruition about now.
Well, that's just great, and that is typical of cities around the world. Whether you're talking about bike share programs, pedestrian zones, carbon emission limits on automobiles, getting fast-moving rapid transit, diesel and hybrid buses that act like subways but much cheaper. There are all kinds of congestion fees. There are dozens of ways you can affect and impact carbon emissions and methane and carbon in cities. They're doing it in Los Angeles. In 5 years, Mayor Villaraigosa, over the last 5 or 6 years, got rid of half of the emissions from the port of Los Angeles by getting the ships that sit at bay to hook up electrically, by getting hybrid trucks to move the cargoes on and off. And in doing that, and getting rid of about half of the carbon from the port, it turns out that 40% of the carbon emissions of Los Angeles come from the port. So in greening up the port, he in effect got rid of 20% of carbon emissions in one of the largest cities in America.
However, you do ask the question in your book, are the interests of cities and of the states to which cities belong in harmony or in conflict? And can cities do what they do in the face of national governments that are not merely indifferent but hostile to their global aspirations? What's your answer?
Well, that's a great question.
That you post, yes.
I ask myself. So I try to ask myself hard questions because you can't make a case unless you ask yourself the hard questions. But there are a couple of things. First of all, the demographics of cities. Today, as I say, in the democratic Western and Australian world, increasingly 70, 80% of the population lives there. That means cities control in a democratic majority their countries and should be able to control the laws. What's happening right now is that you have national and regional governments throttling, constraining, and strangling local government, taking away their resources. Cities provide something like 80% of GDP, 85% of taxes, but only get 50 or 60% of them back again. So cities have, the urban populations have to organize democratically to insist that they keep a larger share of their resources, that they're given greater jurisdictional authority. In Washington, D.C., here in the United States, they passed a gun ban because gangs in Washington, the kids were killing one another, and a federal court said that's unconstitutional, you can't do it. Well, you know, we've got to challenge that in court. We've
so they are competitors, you know, then. They're straight competitors, then.
Well, so the point is, cities are the demographic and democratic majority, but they are not, you know, they are fighting below their weight. They're not really expressing this, and we need today to have cities have more authority. What happened, a very interesting thing happened in Italy last month. I was with Matteo Renzi, who is the mayor of Florence. And as mayor of Florence, he invited me to a big mayor's conference there. On the day I went, he excused himself after we spoke, went to Rome, and was appointed prime minister. And as prime minister, he has moved to alter the Italian constitution to put cities, the old city states, you know, Venice and Florence in the old days,
sure,
back into the center of the constitution. The Senate will now represent 12 major city regions rather than representing parties and abstract groups as they did before. So he's actually altered the constitution to put cities back in the center of things, give them more autonomy, give them more jurisdictional authority. That's the kind of thing I think you will see increasingly happen in other parts of the world as cities and the majority democratic populations in cities insist on having an authority equal to their democratic numbers and their financial power.
That is a very interesting development. And of course, that would be quite a delicate one here in Australia with our huge country that we've got and the sort of really long-standing relationship, I suppose I'd put it, between the city and the country, and a great deal of sentimentality about the country and the role of rural areas in Australian history. And, you know, it can be a very edgy debate, that question of where the resources are going in a big country like Australia.
Well, there's no question about that. And by the way, I just came back from Denver, Colorado, the Rocky Mountain states, which are sort of the Australia of the United States, you might say. A lot of empty land, a lot of individualism, a lot of sense of the importance of the land, but also increasingly cities like Cheyenne, Wyoming, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Denver, Colorado, with increasing numbers of population, a lot of new immigrants. But when I argue that cities need more authority and more jurisdiction, it's not to crush the country. It's not to ignore the country. It's rather to work out cooperative relationships in which they serve one another. The best regions of the United States are the regions where there is a relationship between, for example, here in New York City and Hudson Valley pastoral farmers, dairy farmers, farmers. We have more and more farm markets that local businesses serve, and that actually is good because it gets in the way of big agribusiness, which tries to dominate the national economy. You're right. This is not a matter of let's have cities now lord it over the land, over the countryside, but rather let's have a relationship in which the way in which they reciprocally serve and meet each other is fully recognized. And cities have the power in most parts of the world, maybe not Australia, but in the United States, for example, there is a vast skewing of political power towards rural minorities in the Senate, in the Tea Party, and the large urban majority is ridiculously underrepresented. That's true in many parts of Europe, and it may not be true in Australia, but I'm sure, you know, the relationship, as you say, between cities and the countryside is an important and delicate one, and it would not hurt to give cities greater jurisdictional authority and a greater capacity to cooperate with the country regions around them.
I couldn't. I'm forbidden to make a political commentary on the ABC. I could if I won't join that particular debate. Very quickly, you talk about garbage, the city's defining association with garbage. I've always been very interested in this. You only have to go to Asia, where garbage is not collected,
right, yeah,
to realise how critically important the routine collection of garbage is to life as we know it. Now, how have you fastened onto this?
Well, you're right. You know, Garvey, I tell a story in the book about Teddy Kollek, who was the mayor of Jerusalem for a long time. He was a Zionist and Jewish, but the fact is Jerusalem is a multicultural city with Jews and Muslims and Christians in it, and all the holy sites are there. And he was regularly, in the 1970s and 80s when he was mayor, he was regularly assailed by imams and by rabbis and by Christian clerics, all arguing about who had access, who should have access to the holy sites, and giving him long speeches. And finally, one day, he got fed up and he turned to him and said, gentlemen, spare me your sermons, and I will fix your sewers. And we might say, you know, spare me your sermons, and I'll pick up your garbage. Spare me your sermons, and I'll keep your buses running. Spare me your sermons, and I will give you an infrastructure in which then you can argue about religion and culture and other things. But let's make the city work first. The real point of democratic institutions is to provide a framework within which then we can talk about religion, we can talk about art, we can talk about business and do that. But right now what's happening is that that very infrastructure is being frozen by ideological quarrels, by nationalism. I mean, I don't just complain about sovereignty and the way it gets in the way of international cooperation. I complain in the book about nationalism, and some people say, oh, well, that's very old-fashioned. But look at the Ukraine today, you know, Crimea. There we have a 19th century tribal battle among, in effect, tribal nationalisms, when the people who live in the various cities are primarily concerned with, you know, making those cities work. And that's true in so many parts of the world. So getting back to cities, getting away from tribal nationalism, getting back to picking up the garbage, keeping the sewers clean, creating an infrastructure in which we can then live out our lives and have our quarrels and our differences and so on, that's what city governance is about, and it should be what democracy is about everywhere.
Collecting garbage and collecting art rather than collecting votes or collecting allies, as you eloquently put it. Ben Barber, you're a great spruiker of your cause. Good luck to you. Thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for taking me off the streets of New York and giving me a chance from the streets of New York to the prairies and belt of Australia to address a lot of these issues.
Bye-bye.